Welcome to this episode of Out of the Best Books, the podcast where we deep dive into classic literature and have conversations about what we've learned and discovered along the way. We love all things books and reading, and we want to share our love of the classics with you. We hope to inspire you to read along with us and join in the conversation. I'm Amity.
And I'm Laura. Let's get started.
Next section. Well, let's see. This is our third section that we're covering of To Kill a Mockingbird. So we're covering chapters 15 through 21. We talked before about this is a slow burn. It is. And this is where it really heats up. It's the trial.
I was trying to remember. Do you remember exactly what was happening where we left off? Because the courtroom hadn't started yet.
No, it hadn't. So remember that Dill had just, he showed up at their house. Right. Okay. He wasn't going to be there for the summer. And then, well, just a lot of things happened. Like Scout and Jem were fighting and Aunt Alexandra is there and she's just a piece of work. She doesn't agree with what Atticus is doing at all. She's very much this Southern, very proud Southern woman who like is extremely racist and doesn't agree with what he's doing at all. And she doesn't agree with how he's raising Scout, especially. She always has something mean to say. So one night, Dill just shows up. He's like under Scout's bed. And he had run away from his mom and her boyfriend, husband person.
Which is interesting because he shows up and then like, at least for the next six chapters that we've read for this week, it's like, now he's just there.
Now he's just there. Yeah. I mean, it just sort of like glosses over. Okay, there were some telephone calls and now he's here.
Yeah.
All is well.
But this section was good.
So good.
We alternate chapters. Anyway, so I'm trying to read two chapters a day. One that I have to kind of outline and then one that I just read. And I find myself like just wanting to like, okay, now I got to know what's going to happen next.
Yeah. And yeah. And for myself, like this was, I mean, all the sections in this book are quite long as far as pages are concerned. And the writing is very small. The type is very small, I should say. But I looked back, I was like, oh my gosh, that was over 60 pages. And I did not really even notice because you're just
keep reading.
Yeah, it's very, very good. The courtroom conversations, interrogations, they're excellent. Very good.
And what I really liked about this week is now I'm like, I liked seeing the courtroom because now I have a full picture of like what probably actually happened. You know what I mean? Why mm-hmm. she accused him of raping her. And anyways, I
yes.
It was fun to find out.
Yep. And we appreciate more fully Atticus's character even more. We just love him. He's amazing. He's brilliant. He's just an incredibly good man. Very strong. My husband and I often talk about alphas, like alpha male, alpha female, whatever. And some of the distinguishing characteristics, it's often not the ones who are like pumping their chest and making lots of noise who are the actual alphas in the room. Atticus is the alpha in this entire town. He is. He has a lot of power. He has a lot of brilliance, but he keeps it all in very excellent control and only lets it out when it's needed. But he doesn't back down.
He's like a quiet leader.
Absolutely. And I think that we really get an excellent idea of this, well, all throughout the book, but really it really amps up in chapter 15. So should we jump into that?
Yep.
In chapter 15, we find out that Dill, you know, like I said, they made some telephone calls and all is well. Dill is there to stay and he's going to be staying with Aunt Rachel. But then they talk about how they start to live a nightmare is what they said. One night, some men come to talk to Atticus. And again, this is the South. They're pretty used to like mobs happening. And we know from history, mobs happened a lot. And that's never a good thing. And the children, for whatever reason, they're familiar with that. So these men come to visit Atticus and they're very worried that they're there to like hurt him. Atticus is like, no, these are my friends. And they were there to, because they were concerned. One of the men is Sheriff Tate. Something that I really liked about it was Mr. Link D says to Atticus, you've got everything to lose from this, Atticus. I mean, everything. You know, they still don't think that Atticus should be defending Tom Robinson. I think they know what the right thing is, but this is, it's such a rough time. It's just a bad time. And Atticus says to him, do you really think so? And I love her commentary. She says, this was Atticus's dangerous question. Do you really think you want to move there, Scout? Bam, 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 and the checkerboard was swept clean of men. Do you really think that, son? Then read this. Jem would struggle the rest of an evening through the speeches of Henry W. Grady. Atticus says, Link, that boy might go to the chair, but he's not going till the truth's told, and you know what the truth is. That is his conviction. He's like, it may be that we cannot rely on justice being done, but we are going to tell the truth, and then basically everybody can go to hell, you know, which they probably will. They're going to know in their hearts they sent an innocent man to the electric chair. All right, I'm going to kind of jump ahead. So something that happens later on is it's a Sunday and it's supper time. Atticus comes to the kids and he's like, I'm going out. You guys are probably going to be fast asleep before I get back. You know, basically behave yourselves. And he takes with him a cord with a light bulb. So the kids go to bed, but Scout can hear Jem sort of moving around and she's like, he's not going to bed. He's like, I'm going to find Atticus. Of course, Scout was like, well, I'm coming with you, obviously. And she's also like, Dill's going to want to come. So they wait for their aunt to go to sleep. Then they sneak out of their house. They go get Dill. Of course, I love this line. It says, he's an old campaigner, so he didn't speak until we were on the sidewalk. It's like he's been on enough adventures with them. He knows we don't say anything until we're clear of the houses. And then he's like, what are we doing? I'm not going to question that you came to my house at like 10 o'clock p.m. and I had to sneak out. But what's up?
You know? He's like, I'll go anywhere, but now where are we going?
I do want to know eventually. But I love Jem. He's pretty great. He's like, I've just got this feeling. So they make their way downtown and you kind of get a little bit of history of different areas of the town and stuff. And they see the jail. And it says the jail was Maycomb's only conversation piece. Its detractors said it looks like a Victorian privy, a bathroom. Its supporters said it gave the town a good, solid, respectable look. And no stranger would ever suspect that it was full of African-Americans. So what they find when they come to the jail is that Atticus is sitting out in front of it, propped in his chair, and he's got his little light bulb strung up and the extension cord is plugged into something. And he's reading. He's sitting in front of the jail. He's protecting Tom Robinson, who is being held in the jail, because Tom Robinson has recently been put there and he knows that people are up in arms about it and he's going to go protect him and make sure that nothing happens to him. It's also important to understand that the newspaper man, Mr. Underwood, he lives like right above the jail. And it's really funny. It talks about how he like basically makes up it, like everything he hears, he puts into the news. So he doesn't really do any, you know, research or anything. He hears about things, he puts them into the newspaper. But that's where he lives, is above the jail. All of a sudden, as the kids are watching, they haven't approached Atticus yet, but as they're watching, these cars come up and all these men get out and they come right up to Atticus and Atticus stands up.
I have a question though. So yeah. Like I'm picturing him not as like a big guy.
Atticus?
Or tough guy, right? I don't know. I just think it's amazing that he would go there and to protect him and just, you know, I don't know. I kind of picture this like little bookish man sitting there.
So the hard thing for me is I cannot help but picture Gregory Peck, who is, he's not a big man, but he's tall. And that's kind of how, I don't know that they necessarily describe his height in here, but so I imagine, just picture Gregory Peck. That's it's like, sorry, he's Atticus Finch to me. But it does talk in here about how he's not skinny, but he's not large. Like he's just kind of lean, but I don't know as far as his height. I don't know.
It's just funny because it's like he's going to go there, sit there and protect him against a mob. Pretty brave.
I think as far as he was very brave, as far as he was concerned, he was Tom Robinson's best chance and nobody else was going to help him. So he
did what he felt like. I guess we do find out later that he has backup.
Kind of. I don't know if that guy was really serious or not. I don't know. I feel like it's kind of questionable. Like, but
would he have actually done something?
Yeah. Would he? I don't know. Okay. So I'm sorry. Atticus does not stand up. He just stays in his chair, but he just sits up. He folds his newspaper, puts it down and, you know, pays attention to the men coming up to him. And the men say to him, is he in there? And Atticus says he is, and he's asleep. Don't wake him up. A sickeningly comic aspect of an unfunny situation. The men talked in near whispers. They're literally there to lynch Tom Robinson. But because Atticus told them he's asleep, now they're going to speak in whispers because they care, you know? They tell him to move aside because, you know, Mr. Finch knows what he wants. So Atticus is like, no, I'm not moving aside, but you guys can turn around and go right back. He's like, I know Sheriff Tate is around here somewhere. And they're like, no, we called him and his men off on a snipe hunt. Basically, they're in the woods. They're nowhere near. It's just about that time that all the kids run out there. Poor Atticus is looking at it going, oh my gosh, here's my children. This just put me in an extremely vulnerable situation. I can't even imagine being in his shoes at that point because he has no bargaining chips. But now the mob does because they, you know, his children are right there.
His kids are always like in growing up in the way.
I know. You know, Atticus is like, Jem, go home. And Jem says, no, Dad, I'm not gonna leave you. Scout starts looking around at these men and she doesn't recognize any of them except for one. And that man is Mr. Cunningham. And so you might recall that near the beginning of the book, she had a little run-in with Walter Cunningham, little boy who he didn't bring lunch to school. He couldn't pay back the teacher for lunch. And so he went and had lunch with Scout and Jem. And Calpurnia told Scout she better treat him well because he's a guest in her house. Scout looks around. She sees Mr. Cunningham. And so she says, hey, Mr. Cunningham, how's your entailment getting on? She just tries to treat him like a human. She tries to remember all the things that Atticus had taught her about being kind and being attentive and listening to people and talking to people and treating them well. And she employs all these things. It's all seems to be falling flat. Is that she brings up Walter and she's like, Walter's in my class. Will you tell him? I said, hey, you know, he ate lunch at my house one time, you know. Basically, that is the magic trick that brings this mob to their senses. We talk sometimes about a mob mentality, which is basically everybody leaves their normal thinking brains behind and just dives down into their amphibian brain, which means that they are not thinking properly at all. They forget their humanity. They forget logic and reason and all of those things. And they just dive into these very primitive urges and instincts. Just her talking to Mr. Cunningham brought him back to his human brain because she tapped into his humanity. And because she did that, he called off the whole thing. And he like knelt down and took her by the shoulder. And she's like, yeah, I will go tell Walter that you said, hey. And he told everybody else, we're leaving, you know, let's get out of here. And they did. This all happened. And something kind of sweet that happens is that Atticus goes, he leans against the wall of the jail. He says he produces his handkerchief, gave his face a going over, and blew his nose violently. Obviously, it was a very intense situation on so many levels for him, and he was probably so, so relieved at the outcome. And then they hear Tom Robinson say, Mr. Finch, asks if they're gone. Atticus says, yep, they've gone. They won't bother you anymore. And then from a different direction, another voice cut crisply through the night, you're damn tootin'. They won't had you covered all the time, Atticus. And so this Mr. Underwood, he has a double-barreled shotgun pointing out the window. And you go, okay, well, you're really serious about it. Why didn't you say something earlier? But maybe he really did have good intentions. And if they had actually like moved forward and had started to try something, that he would have done something. I don't know.
Yeah, it makes anyway. You wonder if they had it set up before or if he was just aware and up there. Or like, did Atticus know? Even if Mr. Underwood didn't want to protect Tom Robinson, he wanted to protect Atticus.
That's true. You know, that's a really good point.
It makes you wonder, like, did he know that he was up there or was that a surprise? And yeah. Atticus is like, okay.
Yeah, it doesn't really say, does it?
No, big sigh of relief. That was an intense chapter. You kids, what are you doing? Why are you following him? And it went best case scenario there.
For sure. I love that. It's something that's really interesting. Have you ever read the book Never Split the Difference?
Possibly.
So he was a hostage negotiator. So you probably at least heard of him if you haven't read the book. You have read it. Okay. So good. But really, the whole idea behind it is when you're talking to people, because he talks about how you take these same principles into parenting, into business, into just any hard conversation. He's like, people just want you to know that they're human and they want to be heard. They want to be understood. These people, there's no really understanding where they're coming. They want to lynch an innocent man, but they were reminded of their humanity. And this little girl saw their humanity, and that just sort of like woke them up and made them go, this is not what we're going to do. So that would not work all the time. You'd probably need some more intense hostage negotiation from somebody like Chris Voss for a lot of people. But
well, it was probably like her reminding Cunningham of his own son.
Yeah.
And like, he wouldn't do this in front of his son. And there were children there. Atticus is over there. So chapter 16, I feel like the first couple chapters in this section were like huge. And then it kind of, they got shorter. So
yeah,
we'll probably take more time in the beginning here. But okay, so it's the next morning. I thought that was really cute that Jem had let Scout sleep next to him, because she was traumatized by the situation.
Yeah, absolutely. It was extremely intense.
So at breakfast, nobody but Jem can eat, which is funny because he's a little teenage boy, right? Aunt Alexandra thinks it's just awful that the kids had snuck out the night before. But Atticus is like, I'm kind of glad they came, because he said, even though Mr. Underwood had been there to protect him, they are the ones that made the difference here. And Mr. Underwood's protection would have caused more trouble.
So. Ultimately, absolutely.
And Atticus happens to mention in front of Calpurnia that Mr. Underwood isn't really fond of black people. I thought this was really cute. Scout's like, I want some coffee. And Calpurnia's like, you're still too little. You're not going to get any coffee. And then she says, I'll let you know when you're old enough, when you're ready to have some. And and she says, well, it'll help my stomach. And so she gives her like a tablespoon of coffee with like a cup full of milk. So cute. Aunt Alexandra is upset that Atticus says things like this in front of Calpurnia. One thing is, Scout is now noticing that Atticus is talking differently to his sister lately. Scout says it was a quiet digging in, never outright irritation. Scout's noticing a difference here. I don't know. Do you think then he's like just getting more firm with her?
I think so. He's like, you're not going to push me around. And he is ever the gentleman. He's ever the gentleman. He's not antagonistic. He's also not rude. You could not say that anything he says to her is rude, but he's also not going to be pushed around.
Yeah, he's not being quiet. So Alexander says, I don't think it's a good habit, Atticus. It encourages them. This, they're talking about saying things in front of Calpurnia. You know how they talk among themselves. Everything that happens in this town's out to the quarters before sundown. And then Atticus says, I don't know of any law that says they can't talk. Maybe if we didn't give them so much to talk about, they'd be quiet. I just think there's so many lines in this book that are just like,
there are so many.
Cut to it. And then Scout asks about Mr. Cunningham being a friend of theirs. Here's what Atticus says about him. He says he's basically a good man. He just has blind spots like the rest of us. Jem butts in that if the kids hadn't been there, he'd have killed Atticus. Atticus's response gives us something to think about. He says, a mob's always made up of people no matter what. Mr. Cunningham was part of a mob last night, but he was still a man. Every mob in every little southern town is always made up of people, you know. Doesn't say much for them, does it? I think when you're part of a mob or a group that's like, maybe like you're in a group of teenagers that's making fun of other kids or something, you forget, you know, who you are. And
yeah, you get very caught up. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think we see that all the time. We try to teach our children to stand up and sometimes be different, because you see them make choices when they're with a bunch of other kids that they wouldn't do normally. And it's like, yeah, it's hard to say no to the crowd. It is hard, but you've got to. You've got to stand up. You've got to be different. Otherwise, you are part of that mob mentality, whatever that may be. So
I really like the idea of remember who you are.
Yeah.
All the time. You all the time. Just try to keep remembering who you are and what you stand for. So Atticus says that because an 8-year-old child had brought them to their senses means that the members of a mob are still human, and that the kids being there had made Walter Cunningham put himself in Atticus's shoes for a minute.
Yeah. Like, so that does go back to what you said. Yeah. It probably really was like, would I do this if my children were here? What if that was me? What if my kids were here standing and watching this? Yeah. How would I feel as a father? And you know, from things that we've heard earlier about the Cunninghams, he is a basically good man. He does have a conscience.
They yeah.
just need to tap into it.
He's not like a Yule.
No, not at all.
Yule. So after this whole breakfast conversation, Atticus is leaving for the day, and he tells the kids, don't come downtown today. Aunt Alexander says that they need to stay in the yard. Now, these kids don't listen to anything anybody says. They do whatever they want.
So they're kids.
Yes. But throughout the morning, so they're watching, like, the whole county is strolling by their house all day long. And Jem is constantly telling Dill about all the people that are coming by, like all the gossip about them.
Yeah.
At one point, they do go over to Miss Maudie's to talk to her. And she says, there's no way I'm going to court today. And then Miss Stephanie comes by and she claims that she's going to the Jitney Jungle. But I think, is it Miss Maudie that's like, I've never seen you go to the Jitney Jungle dressed like that or with a hat on or something. Then she admits that she is going to the courthouse and she wants to see what Atticus is up to. Miss Maudie tells her, be careful, because she knows so much about the case that Atticus might call her to be a witness or subpoena her.
She is the town gossip.
Yes.
Yes.
After dinner, the kids do go to town and it's full of people. There are people everywhere. There's nowhere to hitch up any more animals. Everybody's outside eating and, you know, it's segregated. So we have like the white people in one section and the black people are eating in another section, except for Mr. Dolphus Raymond, who we get the whole backstory about him. He's got a black woman that he has several children with. Scout was like, well, how do you know they're mixed kids? And Jem's like, well, sometimes you have to just like know, because if you know who they are, then you know that they're the mixed kids. So she.
Yeah.
No, because he's pointing them out and she's like, well, that kid doesn't look black or, you know.
It doesn't look like he has any white in him or anything. Yeah.
Yes. So apparently the woman that he was supposed to marry in this huge wedding had shot herself because he wouldn't give up his, quote, other woman. And then the town just is like, well, he's kind of been just drunk ever since then. So he's there. He's over by the community of black people and he's drinking out of a paper bag with a straw poking out the top, which apparently he's always doing. Some kind of signal happens and the crowd then goes to congregate back inside the court. And the kids are just shocked by how many people are there. They overhear a conversation about their father. Someone is upset that he's actually trying to defend Tom Robinson. Like, they know that he was assigned, but they're like, you don't really need to do a good job. Why are you even
trying? Because he's assigned, but that is different from him just really defending him. And they kind of make that distinction. And he's going to. Of course he's going to.
Yeah. So at this point, they're coming into the courthouse and Scout gets separated from Jem and Dill. This has like caused them to not be able to get a seat in the courtroom. So they kind of end up in the balcony, which is where all of the black community is sitting. We kind of get a picture of what the courtroom looks like. We get a description of the judge. And we find out that Heck Tate, the sheriff, is on the witness stand. It's about to ramp up.
Well, let's just jump right into it. We're from Scout and Jem's point of view. They're up in the balcony. They look down and Scout was like, is that the Yule family? I don't think up to this point we knew who all was involved in the trial. I don't think.
I think they mentioned him once.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
So Scout sees the Yule family down there and she's like, yeah. And Jem just says, well, be quiet because Heck Tate is testifying. Okay. We also get introduced to the solicitor who's the prosecuting attorney. His name is Mr. Gilmer and he's actually from a different town. So he just comes in for these kinds of things. All right. Jumping into it, Mr. Gilmer is the first one to question Sheriff Tate. And so we get an idea of what this case is even about. And he talks about how he had been called by Mr. Bob Yule back in November. Remember, this is summer now, right? Summer of the following year. Back in November, he'd gotten a call that Mayella Yule had been raped and beaten. And so, of course, he drives out to the Yule house very quickly, and she had been beaten pretty badly. They asked her if she'd been taken advantage of, if she'd been raped, and she said yes. And they immediately said it was Tom Robinson who had done it. And he is a black man who lived fairly near their house. Atticus gets up to cross-examine Sheriff Tate. And his first question is, now, did you guys call a doctor? And Sheriff Tate is like, no, you never called the doctor. No, why didn't you call a doctor? Because it was pretty obvious. Like, she was banged up. She said she'd been raped. But you didn't call a doctor. Okay. So then Atticus asks Sheriff Tate for a description of her injuries. And he goes into it pretty extensively. He talks about how, like, she has a black eye. He's not totally sure which eye it was that was black. Atticus is like, well, was it the right or was it the left? Finally, he settles on, oh, it was the right eye. She has finger marks, like, all around her throat. This was kind of a funny comment, though. Something that Scout says. They just talk about how, I mean, this is a pretty intense courtroom hearing. She says it's kind of dull up to this point because she says with his, Atticus's, infinite capacity for calming turbulent seas, he could make a rape case as dry as a sermon because he's so calm. Mm-hmm. What a gift. Like, go into every situation, just we're going to handle this calmly. Okay. The next person that's called to the stand is Robert E. Lee Ewell. What a name. Also known as Bob. So he is the father. He's Mr. Ewell. We kind of start to get an idea of, I mean, we got a brief overview of the Ewell family before because one of their sons was in Scout's class at school very briefly. And we find out that the school superintendent would try to get the kids to go to school. They made it like one day and then she figured that her job was done. So she never pursued it anymore. It says every town the size of Maycomb had families like the Ewells. No economic fluctuations changed their status. People like the Ewells lived as guests of the county in prosperity as well as in the depths of a depression. So it didn't matter if the economy was going well or going horribly. These people lived the exact same. No truant officers could keep their numerous offspring in school. No public health officer could free them from congenital defects, various worms, and the diseases indigenous to filthy surroundings. They live right behind the dump. They live in a house that used to be owned by an African-American family. Very run down. It has like aluminum cans nailed to the roof. And the windows are not really windows. They just like open places in the walls. It's extremely random. It's just filthy. It says that the yard looks like the playhouse of an insane child. There's just stuff everywhere. They'll daily go to the dump to glean things from the dump. And the fence is constructed of like broomsticks and just random, you know, branches and pieces of wood. It looks awful. There is one part that is very out of sync with everything else. And there's these like white ceramic jars with these beautiful red geraniums. And everybody says that was Mayella Ewell's doing this. She did have like this one little touch of beauty in that just kind of horrifying area. Nobody knew how many children there were. They were all just always sick and filthy. You know, people pretty much left them alone. It seemed like except around Christmas time when they would take them charity baskets. And they would often see them because they were asked by the city to like take their Christmas trees to the dump to save the trash person. You know, so around Christmas time, people would see the Ewells. Other than that, not so much. It was like they knew they were there. They knew they were like living off the county, but they pretty much left them alone. Bob Ewell is now on the stand. Mr. Gilmer gets up to question him. And this is an interesting thing that she inserts here. It does make me wonder if Harper Lee maybe heard dad was a lawyer, her husband was a lawyer or something. I feel like she has a very unique perspective on lawyers. But she says, you know, a lot of people think that lawyers, the opposing counsel, they're going to be enemies. She's like, but they're really not. We're often surprised to see opposing counsel go arm in arm with their tormentors during the first recess. And she says, it didn't really matter to Jem or me if we saw our father win or lose. Like it didn't affect how we thought of him. It didn't give us any stress. And that probably had a lot to do with the way that Atticus was all the time, just because, again, he was like very calm. He probably talked to them about it and was like, you know, this is just our job. We're doing the best that we can. Sometimes we win, sometimes we lose. She said she had never heard Atticus raise her voice except one time when he was speaking to a deaf witness.
There's a lot of things Atticus doesn't do. And the kids note it. Like, he doesn't raise his voice. He's just always calm.
He doesn't sweat.
Yep. He doesn't loosen his cloak, like his tie and his coat.
Yeah. There's a lot of things that he's very consistent, isn't he?
Yeah.
A lot of people might say, well, he's very dry. Well, he's also somebody that can be counted on and trusted.
Yeah.
So, all right. So Mr. Gilmer is asking him questions. And I think some of these are important to put in here. So first he says, are you the father of Mayella Ewell? And his response is very inappropriate. He says, well, if I ain't, I can't do nothing about it now. Her ma's dead. So Judge Taylor calls him out right away. He's like, don't ever say anything like that again. That was super inappropriate. Don't be obscene. So anyway, we get to the heart of the story. He says, that he was coming in from the woods with a load of wood. And he said, I just got to the fence and I heard Miela screaming like a stuck hog. So he said that he went to the window and he could see Tom Robinson having intercourse with his daughter. That's what he claimed. So he started yelling and he said that Tom Robinson got out of there quickly. And he said that the room was all like, you know, everything was messed up. Things were strewn everywhere. And his daughter was really beaten up. Just with how kind of graphic he is about things, the kids are sitting with Reverend Sykes and he's like, I don't think you kids should be here. Maybe you need to go. And Jen was like, no, we're going to stay. So they did. But Judge Taylor intervenes for just a minute and he says, there has been a request that this courtroom be cleared of spectators, or at least of women and children, a request that will be denied for the time being. And he says, you will receive what you see and hear in silence, or you will leave this courtroom, but you won't leave it until the whole boiling of you come before me in contempt charges. So he's like, everybody needs to calm down, including the witnesses. He's like, I think he didn't want to be banging his gavel all the time and have everybody just in an uproar all the time. So he's like, either chill out or I will make all of you leave, but you're first going to be charged with contempt of court if you don't knock it off, you know? Something else that Bob Ewell says, he's like, recognized immediately who the man was in the room with Mayella, because there's a whole bunch of African-Americans who live just down the road, basically. He says, I've asked this county for 15 years to clean out that nest down yonder. They're dangerous to live around, sides devaluing my property, which is just
ridiculous.
Ridiculous. He lives by the dump. And like, what value is he bringing to his property?
Well, yeah, that's what's funny is later, it might be right there where it talks about how the other people's homes in that area are well kept.
Yeah.
They're clean.
Yes.
And his house looks like an insane child's play area.
Yeah, that's something that Scout talks about, because when they do go to like drop off their Christmas trees at the dump, they almost have no choice but to go down to the area where all the African-American families live. And that's what she talks about. There are these cozy, neat little houses, very well kept. And he claims that they are devaluing his property.
Yeah.
Okay, so then Atticus jumps up to cross-examine him. He asks him if he agrees with the evaluation of Mayella's injuries. Was it her left eye? Was it her right eye? He's like, I agree with everything Sheriff Tate said. Yes, it was her right side of her face that was pretty beaten up. And then Atticus asks him if he can read and write, and he asks him to write his name. He writes his name with his left hand. Judge Taylor is actually the one who calls it out. He's like, you're left-handed, Mr. Ewell. Well, the point being, for the right side of her face to be beaten up, it would have to be done with the left hand. Scout is concerned. He's like, okay, Atticus is trying to show that Mr. Ewell could have been the one to beat up Mayella because he's left-handed and that would just make sense. It would be the right side of her face. But she's like, but how do we know that Tom Robinson isn't left-handed? And so she felt like Jem was feeling sort of a false sense of security. So that's where we are so far. We've heard from Sheriff Tate. We've heard from Bob Ewell, who is very crass and vulgar. He's not a nice man, but he has this story that he saw Tom Robinson having intercourse with his daughter, and he claims that he beat her up. And we also found out that he is left-handed.
One thing I'm picturing is like, okay, if he was assaulting her, if he was taking advantage of her, he couldn't have been able to leave that quickly.
Well, that's true.
I have thought of that. Like, and how
that is
did
true.
He leave the house? Like,
yeah.
What did he look like when he left the house?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Good point.
None of this stuff makes sense. Like, and they all know it.
They all know it.
Okay. So chapter 18. So now Mayella Ewell is called to the stage. She's a sturdy lady. And she looks like she works hard, but she also looks like she keeps herself clean, which they kind of compared that to her dad, who's mm-hmm. not clean.
Right.
So that tracks with the like the geraniums. And so Mr. Gilmer asks her to tell the jury what had happened that night. And she says that she called Tom Robinson inside the fence to break up a dresser. Whatever that word was, I can't remember.
Chiffarobe, yes, it's just a dresser.
Yes. So a dresser for her for a nickel. And once He got inside. He went into the fence. She goes in to get a nickel. And so once he gets in the side of her house, he grabs her and he took advantage of her. She says when she had gone in the house to get the nickel, he had came up from behind her. And he had had her around the neck. And then he'd pushed her to the floor. And that's where he took advantage of her. Mr. Gilmer asked if she screamed. And she'd said she'd hollered for all she was worth. She says the next thing she remembered was her papa standing over her hollering, "Who done it? Who done it?" And she fainted. And then the next thing she knows after that, Mr. Tate is pulling her up off the floor and like taking her to a water bucket. And that's the other interesting thing I thought of when he talks to Mr. Yule is, so you weren't concerned about your daughter at all.
Right, right.
Her condition, like how to get her some help. He's yeah. just like, he did it, he did it, he did it.
Yeah. So. Which again, I think goes back to Atticus being like, and you never called a doctor. Like you were so sure she was raped and you never called a doctor.
I'm just saying like your first instinct would be to help her.
Yeah.
You know, even if you didn't call a doctor right away, you would eventually. But like, that wasn't.
Right.
Worried about that. So when it's Atticus's turn to cross-examine, she says that she didn't like how Atticus had treated her dad on the stand. So she's afraid of him. She's afraid of this question.
Yeah.
So at first, Atticus is kind of just making small talk with her, trying to make her feel comfortable, which is a totally good tactic. And you see that happen all the time when you watch trials. I don't know if you've watched any lately. I watched the whole Gwyneth Paltrow trial with the ski accident. That was fascinating.
Oh, I didn't know anything about that.
Maybe like a year and a half ago. Fascinating. And then David and I watched, well, we couldn't watch it, but we listened to a lot of the Lori Daybell trial. And so.
Yeah, I remember you did that.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's just interesting how they get up there and they like kind of make small talk with them, just like he did. Make them feel comfortable. So what we find out from that is that Mayella has seven unhelpful siblings. She does everything. Her father drinks a lot. He asks her about friends and she's kind of like, almost like, what are friends? Like, I don't even know what you're talking about. Like, clearly she had, they have no friends either. He asks her about her dad, which she says he's tolerable, except when, and then she doesn't keep. Red flag, red flag. So Atticus then asks her if her dad ever beats her and she claims that he's never touched her. Then he starts to ask her about the case. So did he hit her in the face? At first, she says she doesn't remember him hitting her, but then all of a sudden she does remember it. Atticus then has Tom Robinson stand up and everyone can clearly see that his left hand is crippled.
Like extremely. Yes. It said his arm is like several inches. His left arm is several inches shorter than his right. And his hand is just this leathery little shriveled thing.
It just like dangles.
Yeah, it's completely useless.
When you were saying like she had marks around her neck, like there's no way he could have taken hands and put it around her neck.
Right, exactly.
It's crazy. So Reverend Sykes then tells Jem that like he had gotten it caught in a, his arm caught in a cotton gin when he was a little boy. Says it like to bled to death, tore all the muscles loose from his bones. As he's standing there, Atticus says, "Is that the man that raped you?" She says, "Yes." And then he asks, "How?" And she claims, "Well, it just happened so fast." Like, okay. Then Mr. Gilmer objects, saying that Atticus is browbeating the witness. And I love this. The judge says, "Oh, sit down, Horace. He's nothing of the sort. If anything, the witness is browbeating Atticus."
Seriously. I know. I love it. I like the judge. I feel like he's trying to be as fair as he can.
Yes. He asks her some more questions. He exposes like kind of how conflicting her story was. He questions her about why she didn't put up a better fight. Why her screams didn't bring the other children running. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. If she screamed and put up a fit, where is everybody? There's lots of little kids running around. And then he says, "Did you scream first at your father instead of at Tom Robinson? Was that it?" And she doesn't answer. And then he says, "Who beat you up, Tom Robinson or your father?" She doesn't answer. Then he says, "What did your father see in the window? The crime of rape or the best defense to it? Why don't you tell the truth, child? Didn't Bob Yule beat you up?" She then says, this is the last thing I'm going to say. She says he did take advantage of her. She accuses all the men there for not doing anything about it. She's like, he did take advantage of me and it's your guys' fault that nothing's going to happen. So then she bursts into tears and then she really glares at Atticus as she like walks down from the stand and goes by him. She's not happy with him. So the judge calls the recess. Mr. Underwood at this point notices that the kids are up in the balcony. I thought this was hilarious. Jem tells Scout that the newspaper editor won't tell Atticus about them being there, but he might write it about it in the newspaper.
He is always gathering info for his newspaper. He won't necessarily talk to anybody, but...
Eventually we're going to get in trouble, but... And then the prosecution rests, and Atticus, it says at the end of the chapter, he has, like, one more witness coming, so...
Yeah. I need to pay attention to more, because they really are very fascinating. The last witness is Tom Robinson himself. And he comes up, he has to, like, pick up his left arm with his right arm to put it on the Bible to swear to tell the truth, the whole truth.
And he can't even do it.
He can't even do it, yeah. Tom is 25 years old. He is married and he has 3 children. And apparently he did have a time earlier in his life that he had to spend 30 days in jail because he and another man were fighting. The other man had cut him. And so he fought back. They were both convicted, but the other man was able to pay a fine. He couldn't, and that's why he spent 30 days in jail. And so the whole point of that was to show, like, look, he has nothing to hide. Atticus asks him if he knows Mayella Yule, and he says, yeah, like, I have to walk past their house pretty much every day to go to work. He picks the fields and just works in general for Mr. Link Dees, we're going to hear from later. He says he works there all year long, and he's like, there's literally no other way to get to his house except walking by the Yules every day, like twice a day, right? And so he's asked if Mayella ever spoke to him, and he said, yeah, she has. Atticus says, when did she ask you to bust up the chifferobe? Remember, the claim is that it happened this past November when she was beat up and raped. Mr. Finch, that was over a year ago. Like, yeah, she asked me to bust up the chifferobe, but it was in the spring. He said that when she asked him to do it, she was like, hey, come bust this up. So he just went and did it. He figured she needed some help. And after he was done, she was like, I guess I need to give you a nickel for doing that. And he was like, no, you don't need it. You don't need to pay me. And so then Atticus is like, did you ever go there again? And Tom just says, well, yeah, like, I walked past there every day. And it seemed like a lot of times she had something that she needed help with. Atticus is like, hey, well, why did you help her? You know, he says, look, there's a bunch of children around there. It seemed like she was the only one who ever did anything. You know, she's working hard. She's has some sense of responsibility, and no one is helping her. And so I just felt like, you know, these are little things. Maybe I could help her out a little bit. So Scout said, it came to me that Mayella Yule must have been the loneliest person in the world. She was even lonelier than Boo Radley, who had not been out of the house in 25 years. It says she was as sad, I thought, as what Jem called a mixed child. White people wouldn't have anything to do with her because she lived among pigs. Wouldn't have anything to do with her because she was white. Tom Robinson was probably the only person who was ever decent to her, but she said he took advantage of her, and when she stood up, she looked at him as if he were dirt beneath her feet. And that probably is true. He was probably the only person who was ever kind to her, ever, you know, paid her any mind at all. She was somebody that the only person who was ever kind to her, she was determined to get, like, to get them, get rid of them. And it, we'll talk about that more a little bit later. But Atticus asks Tom if he had ever gone on the Yule property without an invitation. He's like, no, I never did. Then Atticus is like, okay, well, how about November of last year? What happened? So what we find out is that Tom was walking home. And there's this little side note that Scout talks about how, like, Tom Robinson, he's a fine specimen of a man. If he was without, like, he's tall, he's strong, he's good looking. He does have this one, like, sort of deformity, but he's well put together, basically. So he was walking home. He notices it's very quiet. And he's like, what? Like, he couldn't figure out why it seemed so quiet. It just wasn't computing for him. But Mayella was like, hey, you know, come here and help me. And so he thought that she had something maybe out in the yard for him to do, because that's usually what would happen. She's like, no, it's in the house. It's this door. It's giving me, the hinges are giving me problems. And so he goes and he checks the door, and he's like, there's nothing wrong with this door. This is just fine. Also, he was like, oh, where's all the kids? She's like, well, I gave them each a nickel and they went to town to get ice cream. He's like, oh, that was really nice of you. She's like, yeah, it took me like a year to save that many nickels. But he was like, oh, well, that was really nice, you know. Finds out there's nothing wrong with the door, but just then she, like, slams the door. And he's like, what are you doing? You know, she's like, well, I actually need you to get that thing down from the shelf. So he stands up on a chair to retrieve this box from the shelf. And as he does that, she like lunges for his legs. She like wraps her arms around his legs. And he's like, it scared me so bad. I jumped down from the chair. And when he did that, then she jumped on him. She like grabbed him around the waist and she kissed him on the cheek. And he's like, oh my gosh, you need to get away from me and I need to leave right now. And what she says to him is very, I can't even like read it, but she says she's like, I've never kissed anybody, so I may as well kiss you. Kiss me back, basically, is what she says. But then he looks up and he sees Bob Ewell hollering through the window. And he's actually not even yelling at Tom. He's yelling at Mayella. Atticus is like, what did he say? And Tom Robinson's like, I don't want to say it because it is so vulgar. But Atticus says, you know, you need to say it. And so he does. He directly quotes Mr. Ewell. It's pretty awful. Again, it's directed at Mayella. It's not even at Tom. But Tom takes the opportunity to leave the house. Atticus asks him directly. He's like, did you rape Mayella Ewell? No, I did not. Did you hurt her at all? No, I did not. Did you resist her advances? He's like, I tried. I tried to without being ugly to her. I didn't want to be ugly. I didn't want to push her or nothing. I love this little aside from Scout. She says, it occurred to me that in their own way, Tom Robinson's manners were as good as Atticus's. But here's the thing too, is he knew his predicament and he brings it up a few times, but she mentions at first, he would not have dared strike a white woman under any circumstances and expect to live long. You strike a white woman, heck, you kiss a white woman, you're in danger of being lynched. Absolutely. So he took the first opportunity to run, which was a sign of guilt. He's damned if he does and he's damned if he doesn't. He's just kind of in the worst predicament and it was not his doing at all. So it's like right at that moment, Mr. Link D stands up and he's just like, he's in the middle of the courtroom. He's like, I just want the whole lot of you to know one thing right now. That boy's worked for me 8 years and I ain't had a speck of trouble out of him. Not a speck. And Judge Taylor kind of comes unglued. I love it too. And I'm like, well, could they just have him like sworn in and get on the witness stand to say that? Because,
right.
Anyway, the cross-examination comes and it's pretty brutal because Mr. Gilmore takes like everything that Tom says and twists it, you know, as they do. What it comes down to, he's like, why were you doing your chores for her? It's like, well, she seemed like she needed help. Well, you have a family of your own. Why didn't you go home and do chores there? He's like, I did both. Okay. He just kept pestering at this. And he says, finally, Tom says, I felt right sorry for her. She seemed to try more than the rest of them. Mr. Gilmore pounces on that. You felt sorry for her? You felt sorry for her? Like, how dare you feel sorry for a white woman? And he kind of keeps reemphasizing, like, look, that whole situation was not a good situation for a black man to be in. So I had to run. Like, that was the only thing that I could do in this situation. The interesting thing, too, is in this moment during the cross-examination, when Mr. Gilmore is just like hammering him, Dill gets really upset because he's been watching the whole thing. It is so apparent, the injustice of it all, that he just starts crying. I don't know if he really even knows why he's crying, but Jem is like, okay, Scout, you've got to take him out. And so Scout does. And she's like, that's just his job. That's what prosecutors do. But he's so upset. He's like, it just made me sick. So they're outside the courthouse and they hear a voice that says, I know what you mean, boy. You aren't thin-hided. It just makes you sick, doesn't it? And it's Mr. Dolphus Raymond. So they're going to have a conversation with him.
That whole chapter is just like, he's doing something nice for her and he feels sorry for her. And yet, and this is how they pay him back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a trashy person.
It's just awful. So chapter 20. So this is where Mr. Dolphus Raymond comes in. This I thought was just hilarious. Mm-hmm. So he offers Dill a drink from his paper sack because he has a stomach ache and doesn't feel well. And Scout's like, don't drink that.
Yeah, because he's kind of known as like the town kind of drunk all the time.
Yes.
Always drinking out of this paper sack.
Dill does take a drink. And then he says, it's nothing but Coca-Cola. Mr. Raymond is like, yeah, I know. It's just Coke. He's like, but don't tell anybody because I have a reputation to uphold here. They all think I'm a drunk and they need to keep. So he pretends that he's drunk too.
Yeah. He feels like it makes it easier for him.
He tells the kids that he pretends to be drunk to the other white people because then they have an explanation for why he just prefers to be with black people, which I'm kind of thinking in this situation and as we're reading the story makes a lot of sense. Why he prefers to be with black people, at least in this town, because they're better.
Especially with his unique perspective that he's like, these people are so short-sighted and so prejudiced with, they're just trapped in this bizarre world they've created. They will not listen to reason. They will not ever improve or progress.
So he tells them maybe when Dill grows up a little bit, he won't get quite so upset when he sees things like this happen when they see people hurting other people, basically.
Yeah.
So then Scout says, Atticus says cheating a colored man is 10 times worse than cheating a white man. Says it's the worst thing you can do. That's something to think, like something to think about. Why? So why do you think he says that? Is it just because it's like trying to take advantage of somebody that's already like considered less fortunate?
Has like every disadvantage pretty much.
Okay.
I think that that's probably what it comes down to. It's like the common saying, taking candy from a baby, you know, that is so just low because a baby can't defend themselves. You cheat a black man, what can he do to defend himself? Everybody knows that justice is almost never on his side. So that's probably what he's saying.
So then Mr. Raymond comments on Atticus's character, which I love. He says, you know, your pa's not a run-of-the-mill man. It'll take a few years for that to sink in. You haven't seen enough of the world yet. You haven't even seen this town, but all you got to do is step back inside this courtroom. He's not a run-of-the-mill man. And you guys don't know this because you grew up with him and eventually you're going to see it. Probably tomorrow or today or whatever. But he's different. Okay, so when the kids get back into the courtroom, Atticus is in the middle of his closing remarks and he's gone over all the evidence. This is when he unbuttons his vest and collar. He loosens his tie. He takes off his coat. And this is nothing the kids have ever seen him do, not even in front of them. Like he does that when it's time for bed. They said it was like standing there seeing him naked. Like he's standing in front of everybody naked. But, you know, he does it because now he's trying to like connect with the jury. Like be a normal guy, like, you know, that's what he's doing because he's about to talk to the jury. So he approaches them and he tells them that the state here hasn't provided any medical evidence that a crime had actually happened. And they're just relying on the testimony of two witnesses, which the defendant had totally contradicted. And he says that the physical evidence suggests that Bob Ewell had beaten Mayella, not Tom Robinson. It had to have been somebody who was left-handed because her right eye was, which we've been over, her right eye is the one that's beaten or was black. And Tom's left hand is not usable. So that doesn't make any sense. He says what Mayella had done wrong was tempt a black man. Then her dad sees it. He's upset. He probably beats her because of it. And then they see a way out because that's like the worst thing she could have done. But now if we're shame, we feel shame. So now if we accuse him, then it will be taken off of her, which is funny because it's like, okay, nobody knew about it. So
I know.
Just go on.
Seriously. Seriously. Let's think about that for just a second.
Yeah. So it's easier for her to accuse him instead of feeling the guilt. And he said, the problem here is your father had seen what happened and then he beat you. So now Atticus is sweating, which is also something he never does. And at that point, he just begs the jury to avoid the assumption that all black people are criminals and that they need to free him because he didn't do this. And he also talks about how in court, all men are supposed to be equal. Like this race shouldn't be an issue here. Either he did it or he didn't. And they should listen to the facts and not, you know, go with the assumption that he's guilty because of the color of his skin. And then at that point, just as he is finishing, Calpurnia walks into the courtroom. I'm like, what is she doing here?
Yeah. I do love, there's a couple of things that he says that I think are very powerful. First, he says, gentlemen, a court is no better than each man of you sitting before me on this jury. In the name of God, do your duty. And then they're not totally sure, but they think that he says, in the name of God, believe him, believe Tom. And you can see he's like desperately trying to appeal to them to be like, his color does not matter. But he, in his heart, he knows he's beating against a brick wall because that's literally all that they see. That's all that they listen to. All the evidence is not stacked against him. It's stacked in his favor. If nothing else, there's absolutely reasonable doubt.
Yeah.
Which should lead to a not guilty verdict. Absolutely. You know, and there's so many things that I think with more time, they totally could have brought out to make it even more convincing. But this is a pretty quick trial.
I thought that like nowadays, you have something like this happen, you would be on, they'd be on trial for weeks.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
This is like a day.
Yeah, which is a lot of pressure on the lawyers.
Yes.
Okay, so chapter 21, Calpurnia is there. She has a note for Atticus. It's a note from Aunt Alexandra saying, your kids have been missing all day. I don't know where they are. And of course, so that's when Mr. Underwood pipes up and he's like, they're on the balcony. So Atticus tells them they need to go home, but they have seen enough. It's like, okay, you can come back because the jury is going to go deliberate, right? And so he's like, yeah, you guys can come back, but go have some dinner, you know? So they go home. Aunt Alexandra is just hemming and hawing. She doesn't love that they get to go back. Calpurnia is upset with them, but just in the way that Calpurnia is, it's like,
she's always upset with them.
She's always upset with them. Aunt Alexandra is just different level, whatever. She's crazy. I'm not going to go into this chapter very much. It's just very briefly, they go back to the court and they're waiting for hours. So the deliberation actually takes a lot longer than they thought. They thought it might be like 5 minutes. I think they were worried it would be like 5 minutes, but it takes quite a long time. They finally come out. They bring out Tom Robinson. Mr. Tate brings the court to order. They said, a jury never looks at a defendant it has convicted. And when this jury came in, not one of them looked at Tom Robinson. The foreman handed a piece of paper to Mr. Tate, who handed it to the clerk, who handed it to the judge. I shut my eyes. Judge Taylor was polling the jury. Guilty, guilty, guilty. It's just unbelievable, you know? And I think Jem was completely, he was blown away. Like he was like, oh, you know, we got this. Atticus, I don't think he was terribly surprised, but probably disappointed. So he goes, he leans over, he says something to Tom, and then he picks up his briefcase and he walks out. Scout is watching him leave and she feels something on her shoulder. And it's, I think it's Reverend Sykes, who is like, Miss Jean Louise, stand up. Your father is passing. And all of the people up on the balcony, they had stood up as he was passing, just out of respect for his incredible efforts. It's pretty predictable, but disgusting. Mm-hmm. So
I was hoping for a different verdict, but I was pretty sure that was going to be the verdict. But then we've got a 25% more of the book. So
that's true. There is more to it. So
something's got to happen. I was asking my kids who'd read this book, and Sydney said she'd read it. And I was like, wasn't it good? Wasn't it good? And she's like, well, honestly, it was boring until the last chapter. And so I'm like, which I think is ridiculous, but it's the last chapter. Something big must happen. So I'm excited. And I'm excited to watch the movie when I'm done. Maybe I'll finish the book this weekend.
It's been so many years since I've watched it, but it's one of those that stays with you because I remember so many things from it. So that's what I was thinking too. I was like, maybe Friday night, movie night. We need, just my whole family. We need to sit down and watch it because.
Yeah. It's so exciting. I'm like really loving this book. So have you had time to read?
Nope.
Okay.
I'm still reading those books to my kids, but I don't have anything new to share. Well, really bad. I'm sorry. I've been learning a lot about personal training.
For your new job.
So I have been reading. I'm learning nothing new.
Sorry. This week has been rough because I worked a lot, but I had Presley with me Monday. And then one of my kids had a mental health day on Tuesday. So I took them with me to work. And then Thursday I went to Portland, but Presley was with me again because we went to see the Lion. We worked and then we went to see the Lion King. And then
That's right. Yes.
So that was fun. But Monday, I listened to music on Monday because The funny thing is that Presley can't handle fast talking.
That, you know, that's how my kids are too. If I try to play my books out loud,
Immediately.
yeah, they're like, oh, yeah.
Yep. And I don't even, it doesn't sound fast to me. And so
No,
Presley, and
yeah.
Presley goes immediately, my stomach hurts. Mom, turn that off. Stop. My stomach hurts. And I'm like, okay. This morning I took her to school. She's apparently ever since COVID, every classroom, David told me he read something about how every classroom has two kids that are just totally out of control. So there's a couple kids in her class that are totally out of control. They like throw things
Oh.
and
Oh.
throw furniture and stuff. And she doesn't feel safe. And so she's been having trouble going to school. And she feels safe with her regular teacher because she's kind of strict. And like as soon as one of the kids acts up, she does a room clear and all the other kids just go to the library. Well, her teacher's gone for 8 weeks and I don't know why, but she has a
Is it a
substitute.
maternity leave?
No, she's like
Oh.
older. I wonder if she's
Oh.
having surgery or something, but
Oh, maybe so.
so that this teacher is like, oh, just ignore them. Like she doesn't. And so
Oh
Presley's
my gosh.
super stressed about going to school. Well, today I was like, okay, well, let's go talk to the, well, I'll take you into the school. We'll get the counselor. I'll tell her really quick what's going on, and then you can go with the counselor. And she goes, well, don't talk too fast or I'll get a stomach ache.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
I was
Does
like,
she,
huh?
like, have you personally gotten that feedback before? Like, does she think that you talk fast?
No. So I'm
That's
like, how fast do you think I'm gonna talk?
yeah.
So I'm just, all I'm
Hilarious.
saying is I was in the car so much this week, I could have listened to like
Yeah.
three books again, but anyways, I did listen to yesterday. I finally got smart and I brought her some headphones. So I gave
Nice.
her the iPad. She put the headphones on. It was great. So I could listen to my book. But next week, we are going to do chapter 22 to, there's 31 chapters. So 22 to 31. And we'll
Yeah.
finish it up. What's our next book? Is it Anne of Green Gables?
Oh, let me see. I think so. Let me look at my sheets real quick.
It is.
Yay! How fun.
Yeah, that'll be
Okay.
fun.
And then Shakespeare.
I'm so scared.
I kind of am too, just because I'm like, oh, there's so many Shakespeare aficionados. But I love Shakespeare. We can talk about Shakespeare.
Okay. Well, you can. I'll just be
You
here.
can
Okay. We're so happy you joined us for this episode. We hope you will join us next week as we discuss To Kill a Mockingbird, chapters 22 through 31. If you have suggestions for books we should read and discuss, please email us at thebestbookspodcast@gmail.com. We would love it if you would leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts and share our podcast with your friends. We want to inspire and encourage as many people as we can to read out of the best books.
As Thoreau says, read the best books first, or you may not have a chance to read them at all. See you next week.